in the second period on Steve Bozak.
Well, everybody's in a state of shock right now in the Calgary bench. They couldn't believe it. Now, there's the puck stopped by Grant Fuhr. Watch Smith. It comes out right in front of his net and tries to pass it through the middle. It hit Grant Fuhr and goes in. Now, for a defenseman, there's so many safe plays you can make along the boards, carry it out, but not through the middle.
At 5:14 of the third period in that game, the one name that wasn't mentioned in that clip that you just heard was the guy that scored it, Perry Berezin. I don't know what you did, because the way that you dumped that puck in must have put a spell on Steve Smith. Okay, be perfectly honest with me. Perry Berezin joins us. He was the gentleman who got credit for that game-winning goal because you were the last one to touch it. Did you even see it when it happened, or was your back, because you were just going to the bench, was your back to the play when that happened?
I didn't see it. I didn't have a seat in the bench because I was looking for a place to sit. And it was like all the oxygen in Northlands Coliseum left after that went in because people were stunned. It was just silence throughout that building. With just a few, you could hear a few people kind of, you know, cheering, but how do you cheer after that? Because you don't even know what happened. And of course, there's no replay in the buildings back then. So no one really, I bet you there were very few people in that building that were actually paying close enough attention to clearly understand what happened. And I dumped it in. I had about five steps to my bench and it was pretty crowded and my back was turned. Patterson jumped on the ice and got the plus.
So you didn't even get a plus on the play?
No, because it all happened while I was standing on the bench, which is why, you know, if you can be known for anything, I will be known as the guy who got credit for the craziest Game 7 series winning goal in history because I scored it while I was on the bench. I don't think that'll happen again.
That was your only goal of that playoff run as well, was it not?
I think so. It's so long ago, Pat. I mean, I literally had to pull up the roster, knowing that you and I were going to talk about this. I had to pull up the roster again. Go, you know, I got to just refresh myself because 86 is a long time ago, and I actually didn't get a chance to watch it the other night when Sportsnet replayed it. But I had a lot of people texting me, so there were a lot of people that were tuning in.
We are replaying that game on the radio tonight, 7 o'clock, Game 7, Smythe Division Final, Flames and Edmonton Oilers, where the Flames would prevail by a 3-2 final score. You know, everybody talks about that goal, and everybody talks about Steve Smith scoring in his own net, but there's still 15 minutes to go in the third period. It's not like that team didn't have Gretzky or Anderson or Messier. Like, you still had to hold them off for the next 15 minutes.
Yeah, and I've talked about this a little bit, and that this is, again, looking back. At the time, nobody cared how we won. We won, moved on. But the way it happened really worked into our favor. Steve Smith, he's a rookie. I believe it was his birthday, too, that day. He was devastated, and he was in tears on the bench afterwards. Because of the strange way this happened, and there's nowadays, if there's a goal scored, they leave enough time. The referees have to wait to drop the puck to leave enough time for, you know, the TV crew to pick up replays and do everything else. Well, back then, it was you scored, as soon as the ref was ready to go, he dropped the puck again. So our bench never really got up too high. Like, we weren't cheering and yelling, high-fiving. Most guys were looking at each other going, what happened? How did we score? So we didn't get up. We didn't change our mentality at all on the bench. We were just very workmanlike. And the Oilers were like, they were deer in the headlights for at least five or six shifts after, where you could just tell the building was dead. Nobody was cheering. It was all the energy, any energy Edmonton had before that goal was gone. And the you know, we can argue that arguably probably the greatest team ever put together, that Oilers team. It took them a while to get going. And then probably after six shifts, the momentum started where Gretzky was out there every second shift. And they started to put more pressure on us, but the guys were blocking as many shots as they could. We were playing a system that was Badger told us how to deal with Wayne for that series, and we did a really good job. He actually, I don't know, this is kind of an interesting side story on that. Before the series started, before our first team meeting, he said he walks in, says, "Okay, guys." And I'm not going to do a Badger imitation. It's too bad. He and the assistant coaches, Pierre Page, Bob Murdoch, walked in and they said, "We figured out how to stop Wayne Gretzky." And that was Badger, right? And we all look at him like, "Oh my God, now what, Badger? Like, what crazy thing have you got?" And he says, "And we got it all on video. We absolutely figured out how to stop him." So he had a whole bunch of clips on how Wayne, if it was his choice, he liked to come in more on one side of the ice, and I believe it was the right side for him. And then he said the problem comes once you get across the blue line. If you force him, he'll make you look silly and dish it off. So what he wanted the defenseman to do, just force him to that side, have the defenseman just kind of corner him, play soft on him, but just kind of corner him so, yes, he can have control of the puck, but just keep him in that corner from the blue line to about 10 feet in. And then he said, once he's there, we can corral him. He's no trouble. The trouble is anyone he can pass to. So pick up Curry first. Make sure you're picking up Coffee on the trailer defenseman. You pick up those guys, and you have no one to give it to. And he won't burn the defenseman because the defenseman's playing soft on him. And it was an easy way for us to play because it was easy on that D. He didn't have to worry about getting burned by Wayne. Wayne would do that tight turn inside the blue line, and then he would look up for his normal people to pass to, and they were all covered. So we reverted back to that kind of style of play again, and you know, Wayne could still try and create some magic, but we felt really comfortable in the system that Badger had for us, and Vernie stood on his head when he had to, and again, the guys just kept playing very disciplined hockey and not trying. Nobody was playing fancy at that point. It was just get it out, get it down, and try and keep them as long as you can in their side of the building. So the time couldn't have ticked any slower off. And if for me, they announced that Lanny got that goal to begin with because, again, nobody was looking at a replay. They just the referees just said, "Oh, let's give it to number 9 because he was closest to Steve." And then I was sitting on the bench waiting for my next shift, and I was playing with Lanny and Tonelli at the time. And then they made the announcement in my hometown building in Edmonton that goal changed to Perry Bears. And I actually looked at Lanny and said, "What? Why the hell did I get did I get the goal?" So it was really super low. It was like, oh, whatever. Like at that point, I'm going, okay, we just got to hang in there and hold on. And, yeah, that the clock ticked down. We heard Peter's first, "Yeah, baby." Well, afterward, we didn't hear it, but all the fans did. And massive celebration because from the day Badger Bob arrived to that team, his sole purpose every day getting up was to beat the Oilers. And we finally did it.
One more before Mr. Pinder jumps in, but as you mentioned, you're an Edmonton guy, you're in your hometown, and that was right in the midst of, and this still being an Albertan born and raised person myself, born right here in Calgary and raised here my whole life, I was not alive when this started, and I was in my formative years when the heyday was going on, but 8 straight years, Perry, where one of the Flames or the Oilers played in the Stanley Cup Finals. From 1983 to 1991, an Alberta team represented in the Stanley Cup Finals. So that blows your mind that Alberta was like the center of the NHL universe for almost a decade.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, I was quick to say the Oilers, you know, again, could be one of the greatest teams ever put together. You know, you look at that roster we had, you would never think that would be one of the greatest teams ever put together, because the teams, you know, obviously the 89 team was way better than that roster that we put out for. But what they were doing was trying to put a roster in purely to beat the Oilers, bringing Nick Fetiu in to make sure that Marty McSorley knew that Fetiu would eat his lunch if he got out of line. Bringing Johnny Tinelli in, the Edmonton Oilers killer from the Islanders, bringing him in just ticked off Glenn Sather so bad when that trade went down. Glenn was so mad. Neil Sheehy, like, who bothered Wayne more than Neil? Nobody. Wayne could not stand Neil, and Neil knew exactly what buttons to push. So all those kind of character guys that were brought in to push the buttons of particular Edmonton Oilers, and we left it up to Badger to push all the buttons of Glenn Sather to tick him off. He had a ton of different ways to just drive him crazy. And it all came together, and fortunately, you know, again, that fortunate bounce with Smith was the finisher. But heck, we took them to seven. They were, I don't know how many points ahead of us in the standings. We lost 11 games in a row that year. Edmonton, that shouldn't have been the year we beat them, but you know, we managed to do it. And again, it took seven, but we did it.
No doubt. He's Perry Berezin joining us on the program this afternoon. Pinder and Steinberg is underway.
Perry, what did that mean to the group to get over the hump? Was there a level of belief that was higher? Did you feel like it was inevitable? Were there some players that thought, I never believed this could happen until it had? I mean, just for that group, what did that milestone mean?
I'm not sure we, at the time, right after the game ended, we knew. I certainly did. I mean, this is really my first full year as a pro. So, you know, I'm seeing everything for the first time. But guys kind of, you know, after the game was over, you could see it was like, okay, we were celebrating, but we were having to get on a plane and knew that we were starting against the St. Louis Blues quickly. So, but I'll tell you when we knew. When we landed in Calgary right after the game and the airport was jammed outside because they wouldn't let us go into the main terminal because they said there were thousands and thousands of people that arrived at the airport. So they brought us on to one of the charter terminal or one of the charter runways, and we got out of the plane outside, just like the old Bill Murray off of Stripes episode where he gets out and says, a surprise party for me. I mean, it felt like that episode where we stepped out of there and thousands of people were screaming against this the fences where you could see them. That's where it hit everybody that, oh, my God, what we just did for the fans and the people of this city and how thankful and appreciative they were following. You know, hey, we got a long way to go to get to the Stanley Cup. That's just, you know, our second series of the playoffs. But I think that's, with your question, I think that's when you realize how big of a deal it was. But then you wake up the next day and you got to wipe it all off. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you just did. You just wipe it away. And it was my second playoff experience in the NHL, but my first full year, I thought that was really probably the strangest thing I've ever done in my life. Go from that much of a high to right back to work and pretend it didn't happen because you got to focus on the St. Louis Blues. The veteran team that we had, and that leadership group there, Doug Risebrow, Lanny, a guy like Joey Mullen at the time, even JT, Johnny Tinelli, they knew, hey, whatever we just did, it's over, boys. Now it's just, we got to think about this team. And they did a good job of that. St. Louis kind of dragged us into another seven-game series. But, you know, we did a good job of it to get to the finals against Montreal. But you couldn't really think about how big of a deal it was at the time. obviously we had to get through them to get to the finals that year. But when I, Ryan, when I returned home to see my parents that summer in Edmonton, and I went to go see one of my best pals growing up, going all through school, best friend I had. And I went in, and his mother wouldn't look at me, wouldn't talk to me. She wouldn't talk to me all summer. She took it personal that I beat, you know, I beat her Edmonton Oilers. And that's when, again, I realized, oh, my God, like, I saw how happy people were in Edmonton or Calgary. Now seeing how miserable they are in Calgary or in Edmonton with the Oilers losing. So, yeah, to the fans, boy, I saw both sides of it.
So we as from afar, we'd always remember that playoff as what we've talked about, which is the Steve Smith goal, the trip to the finals, and the eventual setback to the Habs. But tell us about the Campbell Conference final against the Blues, because that's something that doesn't seem to crack the highlight list. What was that series like? What do you remember about it?
I remember us getting in. I'd have to actually look at to see how the games worked out. Because early on when we played them, and I think we had a 3-1 lead and in the series, and we were better than the Blues. But we had made some trades that year where Gino Cavallini and Charlie Bourgeois were in St. Louis, and with those trades, those guys were and Eddie Beers, I believe, too, was a part of that. And those guys made it their little mission to want to hurt us and take us down. So they dragged us through a 7-game series, where at first it looked pretty good that we were going to win, 4-1. But they made it difficult on us. I remember Gino because he was my roommate when we were playing here with the Flames. And so I'd see him after games, and he'd look at me and goes, "We pulled another rabbit out of a hat, buddy. You better watch out because we got more rabbits to come." And they were just somehow finding ways to win every night. That building in St. Louis, they were just they were going crazy there. That would be actually more than anything. I would love to see that series on TV at some point, because – I think all of us were okay. We're the best team. There's no doubt we got by the best team. Now we are the best team, and maybe we got a little too comfortable after the 3-1 lead, and that hurt us the most going into play Montreal, because having to go another 7 and really tight, you've wasted a lot of energy to get to the final, and Montreal obviously had the a little easier path getting there.
Yeah, no question. Tell us a bit about what you learned in the final, because clearly getting over the Edmonton hurdle was one thing, but to get past Edmonton and still not hoist the Stanley Cup, and I know you weren't there at the end of 89, but what was the takeaway that core could, I guess, use as a tool to make 89 happen potentially?
Yeah, it definitely, there were two sides of it. The one is, yes, we slayed the dragon. But to get that close, and again, my first full season as a National Hockey League player, you realize what a grind 4 series is on you mentally and physically. And how much longer you're playing hockey than the guy who didn't make the playoffs. And at the end of the day, when we lost, I thought, I'm not sure I'd feel any different if I would have not made the playoffs. Like, this is devastating to lose in the final. And you almost feel like, what a waste to get this far and not win. And that's the way it should feel. It should feel devastating. But it's not till afterwards that you realize what a massive accomplishment it is to get to a final, a Stanley Cup final. And for me to start my first full year with that experience was, that was invaluable. Because I went for a lot of, I went every season till I got to the Sharks. Every season, I always made the playoffs, every team I played on. And the first, my first year with the Sharks and knowing that we weren't going to make the playoffs by October, it was pretty empty. Like, you're playing games where you know they mean absolutely nothing. And I realized after, there's so many players in the league that never, ever got to a Stanley Cup final. Here, my first full year I got there, now I want to get to, I want to win this thing. And I thought for sure that our team definitely, we had all the tools. We had the right people. Cliff Fletcher was a mastermind at putting teams together. And the next season, following that 86 run, the next season, okay, we're going to do this again. And there was a lot of belief, a lot of confidence. Edmonton wasn't that nearly as intimidating after you take them down. They just weren't. They were still great, but they just didn't have that edge of intimidation that they had through all those other years, where you just look at that smirk on Sather's face, even if you were up on them in a regular season game, even if you were up by 3 goals, he'd still have that smirk on his face, and you went, really? You still freaking believe you're going to win? And sure enough, they had that arrogance, that confidence. It was so good for that hockey team because they could. They could score 3 goals in the last 3 minutes and beat you. But we started to carry that little more of the confidence each time we played them, which was massive for our organization.
Perry Bereson joining us on Pinder and Steinberg here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Perry, just before we let you go, tell us a little bit about what you did with some of the Special Olympics Calgary athletes this past week. Last time I saw you, it feels like it was months ago. It was like 3 weeks ago. Saw you at the Special Olympics Breakfast of Champions. That was like one of the last events that we were actually able to have in our city before this whole thing hit. But you've been able to virtually stay in contact with the athletes at Special, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, they started a really cool program where they wanted the athletes to still work out and be active. So they thought it'd be great if they had guest workout coaches, and they did it on Facebook Live. So they asked if I would do it, and my daughter and I, Renee and I, here, stuck in our house like everyone else, we had our day on Monday, this past Monday. And we got to do a live workout with, I think we had 63 participants come on. Did a fun workout. Just some good stuff that everyone can do in their own homes without any equipment. Interacted with them, and on that FaceTime or Facebook Live, they're sending comments as it went along, so you could see the comments and read and see their feedback. And Pat, as you know, it's something that the feedback and the interaction is something I just love. You love, I miss it so bad. And at the breakfast that you were good enough to host, you know, there was no hugging, there was no touching. They didn't want any of that. And I went, oh, this is kind of sad. This is the greatest group to see smile and get a big hug from. So I kind of felt a little bit of it on Monday. It was special that they asked us to do it, and I had a ton of fun doing it. Lisa Longball did hers yesterday, and I tuned in for a little bit of it, and we know for sure it had a lot of energy. Because she, as we know, has a lot of energy. So they've got a lot of guest people coming in trying to do it. As long as this goes on, they're going to try and continue to do it. It's a great initiative, and I'm proud of the relationship with the Calgary Special Olympics.
You're a good man, Perry. You do great work in this city, and you also got credit for one of the biggest goals in Calgary Flames history. There's that, too. Thanks.
Again, 86 is a long time ago. It's pretty cool to look back at box scores and even the rosters and see try and relive some of it. But, my version of it is going to be different than, I would say, any of the other guys. It's, everyone's got their own take on it. That's mine. So I hope it brought people back to some good times.
Thanks for doing this, Perry.
Thanks, Perry.
Stay safe, hey?
Yeah, you guys too. Thanks for staying on the air and keeping us entertained.
We're doing our best. Good stuff, Perry. Thank you, pal.
See ya.